This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Dan Hurley. Later in the program, the story of an all-black high school in Columbus in the late 60s, winning both the state basketball and baseball championships. But first, medical marijuana is becoming legal in some states around the country, but some people are already using an over-the-counter medication derived from marijuana to treat a rare form of epilepsy. Joining me to talk about this treatment are from the University of Cincinnati Medical Center, Epilepsy Center, Director and College of Medicine, Department of Neurology and Rehabilitation Medicine, Professor Dr. Michael Privatera, Corporate Pharmacy Drug and Policy Development Specialist Geraldine Water, and Clinical Pharmacy Specialist Chrissy Reinstadler. You can join the conversation by emailing talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Dr. Privatera, we're going to start with you. What is CBD or cannabidiol?
Marijuana has two main ingredients, THC and CBD. THC is the part that most people understand makes you high. That's what people use for recreation. CBD is another element of it. What we know now is that CBD doesn't make people high at all. When you extract all the THC, there's no evidence that people get high or stoned. CBD is thought to have had the medical applications. And so recently we completed a study of a compound that's now approved by FDA of pure CBD for epilepsy. And that's what's been in the news because the study was positive and the FDA has actually approved that pure CBD oil product.
Now, you got this from marijuana, not from hemp. Is that correct?
That's right. Well, it's the marijuana plant. So when... For this company, how they develop is they grow high CBD strains of marijuana plants, then they extract it as an oil, and then they take out all the THC. So that's kind of the process that it goes through.
Good. So let's talk a little bit about the study that you did, and we'll start with you explaining what you were trying to find out. What made you decide to look into this?
There are a lot of people with epilepsy who don't respond to medications, and it's approximated that about a third of people who have epilepsy won't respond to the general regular medication. So we have a big program here, many programs throughout the country, just helping people with poorly controlled or medication-resistant epilepsy. So we're always looking for new treatments. It's really a very difficult area. And there were suggestions from anecdotal things where people had taken CBD, especially in young children, with some more severe types of epilepsy, that CBD could really help. So this company called GW, the U.S. company is called Greenwich, started producing this. And this is a company that's actually, for the last 25 years, has been producing marijuana derivatives for a variety of different indications. So we were part of a nationwide study looking at people with very severe epilepsy. Like in our study, the average person in our study had 80 seizures a month, which is pretty severe.
That's a lot.
A lot. And that is despite optimal treatment with all the other treatments that we have. And we have about 20 other medications that we use for epilepsy. What we found was pretty remarkable. We had about a 50% reduction on average all across these very severe people. Some people didn't respond as well, but many people had up to 90% or more reduction in seizures. And the side effects were not, it wasn't that there were no side effects, because some people did have mild liver problems. A lot of people got sedated, but the effect on the seizures was really remarkable. It was as good as I've ever seen, and I've been doing this work for 30 years.
And what was the role that each of you had? Geraldine, we'll start with you. Did you work on this study at all with him, or did you help prepare the medicine? You're a pharmacist, right?
Yes, I'm a pharmacist. So my involvement thus far has mostly been as a policy resource and a resource on the regulatory side of the impending medical marijuana control program that's going to be made live in the state of Ohio. But I do think as a pharmacist, it's very important for us to be sources of information for the general public and for our patients regarding some of the differences in the product that Dr. Privatera is talking about versus some of the other items that people in the community may see on the shelf in various stores or on online platforms.
And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. Chrissy, your role?
All right. So my particular specialty is psychiatry, so kind of the other side, brain diseases. And how I got involved in our in discussions of medical marijuana was basically our patients are asking for it all the time. And so I needed to educate myself more. So Geralyn and I have actually partnered and done several educational programs for pharmacists. We're going to be doing it for psychiatry grand rounds in the fall to kind of educate everybody on this, because there was a lot of stuff we didn't know, and we're still finding out new things every day. And definitely the evidence base for using it in epilepsy is amazing to me, as somebody who doesn't necessarily work with epilepsy patients. But I am also interested in the evidence that is surfacing and it's coming out more and more, and using it for things like schizophrenia, PTSD, and anxiety.
And is yours also the research you're doing with marijuana with the THC or without?
So the evidence that is available, it's supporting heavily more use in schizophrenia and other brain diseases like that, is a CBD specific product. When you mix the THC in, the THC is what causes a lot of the undesirable psychoactive effects like hallucinations, increased anxiety, and things like that. There's actually evidence that shows THC containing things like just even people who smoke marijuana have an earlier onset and more severe schizophrenia. So the THC is a problematic part of marijuana, where the CBD seems to be helpful. It actually seems to have antipsychotic activity. And it's a difference in the way the THC and the CBD act on the different receptors in the brain.
Dr. Privatera, with the CBD, are there any side effects that you found that the patients you were treating had from the CBD?
In the study that we did, the most common side effect we saw was sedation. Now, some of that may be related to the fact that we used pretty high doses, and we were talking about things that you see on the shelf. I live in Clifton, so I was in Clifton at one of the places that sells CBD, and I just looked at the bottle, and the whole bottle was about 300 or 400 milligrams, and it said, we'll take 3 drops twice a day. And in our study, probably half of the people were taking that much twice a day.
The whole bottle.
Yes, right. So the doses that we used in the study for epilepsy were probably 10 times or more the typical doses that people are seeing on these over-the-counter type things. Now, just like any study, when we have a new drug, we don't know exactly where the right dose is. Sometimes we shoot a little too high, and sometimes we shoot a little too low. My estimate from the study that we did was we probably shot a little too high. So I think we saw a little bit more sedation than we would have seen if we had started at much lower doses, which is what I'm planning to do once the drug is approved. My starting dose will probably be about 25% of what our starting dose was in the study. But again, sleepiness or sedation was the number one thing. Some people had bowel problems. They had some diarrhea and things like that. But that may be because it was in an oil. So they were drinking a lot of oil every day. So that nobody really knows whether that's the CBD itself or the oil or some combination. And then a small number of people had liver dysfunction. But again, that seemed to be dose related, way higher at the higher doses and higher when we saw it, when they took it with another drug called Valproate or Depakote, which is a common seizure medication, especially in the subtype of seizures that we used, that we were studying in the study. So high dose combination with Valproate, that seems to increase the risk of the liver problems. And if you don't have either of those two things, vast majority of people had no liver side effects.
Geralyn, Dr. Privatera talked about the CBD you can buy over the counter. Talk a little bit about that. That's available now. That's legal.
So technically, under the Controlled Substances Act, it is not legal federally. The products that you do see in shops throughout the city, throughout the state, are typically derived from hemp.
And as opposed to marijuana.
So they're both cannabis plants.
Right.
Hemp, however, is a subtype that is not capable of obtaining those high percentages of CBD, which would be the ones that were in the Epidiolex study. So typically, hemp-derived CBD is typically 2 to 4% CBD in the product. And then that sort of translates to what Dr. Privatera was talking about with the total contents within that product that's sold are significantly lower amounts. So it's technically illegal, but again, the FDA oversight of these products is limited in terms of time and personnel resources that are able to be invested in pursuing these, deviations from what's allowed. And in addition, the World Health Organization, in a recent report in 2017, at this time has not identified any main safety concerns with use of these products because they are such a low exposure to the product. So you wouldn't see some of those adverse effects that you may see at the higher doses of the sedation or some of the liver issues. More of where the concern comes from is with potential contaminants to those products, because in order to try and obtain higher percentage of CBD in the product, the plant itself may pick up other heavy metals or other contaminants from the soil, and that, if it's in the plant, would end up being in the final product.
So you wouldn't necessarily advise people to go self-treat over the counter with those?
Correct. Because there are a number of products for the various disease states that people are seeking to use these products for that are already regulated through the FDA process so that it can assure safe and efficacious products for the patient populations.
Talk a little bit, Dr. Privatera, about where this goes now. You've done this research. The FDA approved it, but you actually had to be very, very cautious, very careful with what you did. I mean, a big black safe I read about. I mean, what happened as you began the study?
We started the study about 2 years ago. And at that point, obviously, any marijuana product would be Schedule One. So Schedule One, there's five schedules of drugs and DEA control, with number one being the most restrictive. So that's where LSD and heroin are. Even cocaine and methamphetamine are two. So marijuana, because it hasn't been proven to work until this most recent study for anything, it was still Schedule One. Schedule One, it took me 9 months to get my Schedule One license with DEA, and I've been doing this kind of work for 30 years in clinical trials. I got fingerprinted. The DEA came. They interviewed me. We had to have a safe. It's an 800-pound safe where my study coordinator, because she's not an RN, she's a bachelor's degree coordinator, she could not have the combination to the safe. Only I could have the combination to the safe. So there are all these crazy restrictions. And even when patients took some of the product home and used it and brought it back, it was in bottles. So they would bring back what was left over. The leftover stuff had to be kept in the safe. We had to have a special group come and pick it up to bring it out for destruction. I mean, it was just layers and layers of paperwork and other kinds of people coming, investigations and things like that, just throughout the entire study. Lots and lots more paperwork than any other study I've ever done.
But worth it.
For the patients, absolutely. Absolutely. The people, we had people come from 100, 150 miles away because they heard about the study and they wanted to be part of the real study and not, you know, just try to get one of these things off the shelves or off the internet.
Dr. Privatera, you've talked about how your trial has been extremely successful and really has helped a number of people with epilepsy, but you said you went at it pretty strong with a pretty high dose, and you would change that now. Why would you change it, and do you think it will be as effective?
The doses that we used were usually 10 milligrams per kilogram per day or 20 milligrams per kilogram per day. And I think, especially in adults, those are pretty high doses. So we saw the effectiveness against seizures early on at lower doses. But because it was a trial and we had very specific doses, we titrated people up. But once the study was over, many of those people, we titrated back down on their dose a little bit. And it still worked for the seizures and produced a lot less of the sleepiness, the sedation, and also the liver problems, too.
And Chrissy, talk to us a little bit about the research that you've done. I know, especially with children, there's concern about brain development and other types of development. Did you see any issues with that, with this treatment?
Correct. So when we talk about marijuana in general, either smoking or just general recreational use of marijuana, there's a lot of concern for pediatric brain development because we do know, as I mentioned earlier, the younger you start using marijuana, the more problems you have with brain development and the issues with cognition, et cetera. The thing that is, and for a lot of the patients that are going to benefit from the Epidiolex, they're children. So one of the concerns is, well, does this have the same issues that regular marijuana would have in pediatric development? And so far, there is no evidence that suggests CBD alone causes any impacts pediatric brain function at all as people grow. So that's a very positive thing. And it also, on a side note, CBD seems to have a lower liability of abuse. So for patients who smoke marijuana, use marijuana recreationally, there's about 8.9% of people will become dependent on marijuana. And I know it's generally considered to be not an addictive substance, but in a small percentage of people it is. The thing that's great about the CBD is it hasn't shown any abuse liability at this point either.
Is the drug a maintenance drug or is it a cure? Once they take it for a while, then the seizures go away, or is it something that you would anticipate your patients would have to be on for the rest of their lives?
I would anticipate that they're going to be on it for the rest of their lives. At this point, it looks like it's, for epilepsy certainly, that it suppresses seizures. It doesn't really cure the seizures. We don't have really long-term data. Probably the people that have been on this the longest in the trials are probably 4 years or so. But at this point, it doesn't look like it would be a cure. Although, you know, I mean, it's certainly possible that in some people. I think the most interesting thing, one of the sort of the breakthrough parts of the study that we did is we've now proven that there is a medical indication that it really works for something. Because of that, the FDA will now reschedule it. So it'll drop from a Schedule 1 to somewhere between 2 and 5. Different people are betting about which about which schedule it'll get. But as Chrissy said, the abuse potential data that they submitted to the FDA were about as clean as it could be. So they may even get something like a Schedule 4.
What would that mean? I mean, for those of us that don't deal with those schedule numbers all the time, what does that mean?
Having a lower schedule that's not Schedule 1 really opens it up to research. That's the big thing, is that, as Chrissy said, there are people with schizophrenia, with anxiety. There's a lot of PTSD, a lot of other chronic pain, all these different areas where people have said, oh, it really works, but nobody has done the study because the studies are so hard to do because it was Schedule 1. Now that the scheduling will be changed and the DEA will announce it at the end of September what the new schedule will be, now that the scheduling is changed, that really opens it up to other areas of research in psychiatry, in pain, or lots of other areas. So I think you're going to see a huge expansion of research activity, primarily in CBD, but maybe even in other areas. Although right now, nobody knows for sure, but it looks like THC will remain Schedule 1, but the CBD, purified CBD, would be downscheduled.
Well, and I think it's also important to note in regards to that, it doesn't mean that all CBD will be rescheduled necessarily. It could, I mean, it's likely to be just the Epidiolex product that's rescheduled. So, you know.
And that's made by a particular company.
Correct. Right. Correct. So any other CBD products will still have to prove efficacy, safety, and consistency of product before they would be able to be rescheduled. And manufacturers can request that a product be rescheduled. For example, dronabinol or Marinol, which is a cannabinoid that's a prescription product in the U.S., it was originally a Schedule 2, and the company petitioned to have it lowered to a Schedule 3. And scheduling just makes it, as Dr. Privatera mentioned, more readily available, easier to do research with, and a lot more accessible for more people.
And you mentioned, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. I was just going to mention, to piggyback on what was stated, and to clarify with the scheduling, the fact that it's currently Schedule 1 indicates no accepted medical use, which this study proves otherwise. And then there are a number of active ongoing studies currently, according to clinicaltrials.gov, in some of the indications that were mentioned, also neuropathic pain, chronic pain that's refractory to current approved therapies. So there is a huge opportunity that is being opened up by this.
And that reminded me of something else too. So it's actually been very interesting too, because it also appears that CBD might be able to be used to help treat opioid use disorder. which would be great in considering the opioid crisis we have going on now. And it also might be able to be used as an alternate to opiates for pain management and maybe not expose people initially to the opiates.
We did get a question emailed from James who says, are there any studies locally? His son has epilepsy and would like to get him in a study. Are you taking new patients for this study or?
We're not. There aren't ongoing studies right now because the drug will be approved. There may be, once it's approved and it gets rescheduled, they'll probably start looking at different epilepsy syndromes, certainly within epilepsy and then obviously in other therapeutic areas. But anyone who has refractory epilepsy or medication-resistant epilepsy can either contact us at the University of Cincinnati or if you're under the age of 18, generally at Children's Hospital. Both epilepsy programs do lots of different clinical trials and probably will be starting new trials once this phase of the approval is complete.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Isaac has a question. Hi, Isaac.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Yeah, I was wondering if the panel could speak to just how the brain receives and processes CBD, or how our body. I've read that our bodies naturally make sort of similar cannabinoids, and other clinical studies where researchers they've tried to kind of shut down the cannabinoid receptors for things like weight management, things like that. And then the kind of second part of my question would be. What is the upside, I guess, of a pharmaceutical approach to cannabis versus just, I mean, it is a plant that is very easy to grow and process. I was just wondering if there was going to be kind of a price difference or what the advantage of like a pharmaceutical approach would be versus just decriminalization.
Sure. So I'm going to answer the second part of your question first. In terms of producing it, through a prescription product, the thing that is insured when you have a commercially produced product, such as Epidiolex, you're guaranteed that what is said to be in the product is in the product. University of Pennsylvania and Johns Hopkins and some others did some analysis of 84 internet available CBD products, and what they found is that there was a huge variation in the label claim. 23% of the products had less CBD than they said, 46% of them had more CBD than they were supposed to, and actually about 20% of them contained THC. We also recently in Utah had adulterated CBD oil that actually contains synthetic cannabinoids, which is similar to like a K2 or a spice that has a lot more psychiatric side effects. So that's the advantage of having a commercially pharmaceutically produced product is that you can ensure that what you're getting is what you think you're getting. In terms of the first part of your question about what the cannabinoids do in your brain, so yes, there are two endogenous cannabinoids that we know of. They were categorized in the 1980s. One's anandamide and the other one is, there's too many syllables in it
that's
for me to pronounce. But I kind of alluded to this earlier, is that THC is a component of marijuana. So within the marijuana plant, there are 60 to 100 cannabinoids. So the cannabinoids are substances that are going to act on these CB receptors in our brain. So there's CBB1 and CB2. And CB1 is pretty spread out through the central nervous system. We know that it plays a role in cognitive function and some movement control and things like that. So THC stimulates those receptors, where CBD, we think, blocks those receptors to a degree. So they kind of have opposite effect.
Great. Now, we are almost out of time. So what's next in 20 seconds? You're going to take this to again once it's legal?
So the next steps in epilepsy are different epilepsy syndromes and also spreading to other non-epilepsy indications.
And we'll look forward to hearing what happens. Thank you so much. We're out of time. Appreciate you all being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking about CBD. My guests, University of Cincinnati Medical Center Epilepsy Center Director and College of Medicine Professor Dr. Michael Privatera, Corporate Pharmacy Drug and Policy Development Specialist Geralyn Water, and Clinical Pharmacy Specialist Chrissy Reinstadler.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.